Lesson number 16 in the series of New Testament survey over the book of 1 Timothy. In preparation, read the 6 chapters. Paul's first series of letters in the New Testament are for church members. He teaches them about salvation, the Christian life, and the return of Jesus. His next series are for the leaders of these churches. In the last lesson, we studied Philemon and Titus. This lesson looks at Paul's first letter to Timothy. To understand the need for this book, we have to know the background. First, of Timothy himself. He was born and raised in Lystra, some 300 miles east of Ephesus. His father was Greek, but his Jewish mother and grandmother trained him in the Old Testament as a typical Jewish boy. He put his faith in Jesus when Paul preached in his city around 47 AD. Some 3 years later, when he was about 20 years old, he became part of Paul's team. By nature, he's timid. He hates confrontations. Around this same time, he was ordained, probably in his own church, and he received spiritual gifts for his ministry. By the time of this letter, Timothy has worked with Paul some 13 years. This is Timothy's background. We also need to know the background of the Ephesian church. It was on Paul's third missionary trip that he spent more than 2 years in Ephesus. He taught every day and eventually established a local church. This was from 53 to 55 AD. From there, Paul continued west and worked throughout Greece. A year later, on his way to Jerusalem, he stopped near the city of Ephesus. He warned the church leaders that false teachers would infiltrate the church. Some would even be from their own congregation. So a major responsibility of church leaders was to limit who can teach and what they teach. Paul's teaching was to be their guide, and later, as his letters became available, they also should be used. When Paul arrived in Jerusalem, he was taken prisoner. He spent the next 4 years in prison, first in Caesarea and then in Rome under house arrest. In 60 AD, he got his freedom and started working with the churches once again. While in Crete in 63 AD, he hears the church in Ephesus is in chaos. Timothy is there, but not in authority. False teachers have taken over the Ephesian church, just as he warned 7 years earlier. This is why Paul leaves Titus on the island of Crete and he goes to Ephesus. When he gets there, he finds some teachers have wandered from the true gospel message and are confused. Some are caught up with Jewish Gnosticism, others with false doctrine. Still other teachers in the church have knowingly rejected the gospel message. This includes one man who is determined to make Paul look bad. He has done everything possible to oppose him, so the congregation will reject Paul. To deal with the chaos, the first thing Paul does is to remove all the leaders and teachers. He becomes the pastor teacher in order to get the believers once again grounded in their faith. But after some 10 months, there's a problem in Macedonia. So he puts Timothy as head pastor and teacher and leaves for northern Greece. But just some 6 months later, wrong people are taking over and other people are out of control. Timothy is comparatively young, in his early 30s. He is still timid by nature and has never been a leader with full authority in the church. Older people, as well as the false teachers, are challenging his authority. So Paul writes from Macedonia in the fall of 63 AD. The purpose of this letter is to encourage Timothy, to give him written authority, and to let him know what is expected of church members and church leaders. Chapters 1 to 3, conduct of church members. Chapters 4 through 6, conduct of Timothy. To begin, Timothy is given written authority to say which men are qualified to teach and what they can teach. Chapter 1, verse 3. As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, stay there in Ephesus, so that you may command certain men not to teach false doctrines any longer, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies. These promote controversies rather than God's work, which is by faith. The word false in verse 3 means a different kind of gospel, one that looks like Christianity, but in reality undermines it. Some in the church are undermining the gospel message. Others are caught up with genealogies. This is Gnostic teaching about the 30 levels of spirit guides that united the supreme being to the evil world. Jewish teachers are taking Old Testament verses, twisting them to combine Jewish beliefs with Gnostic teaching. They consider themselves experts in the laws of Moses and are very convincing. So Paul continues in verse 7, they want to be teachers of the law, but they do not know what they're talking about or what they so confidently affirm. What these men are teaching is wrong and must be stopped, both the undermining and Gnosticism. Paul believed God entrusted him with the true gospel message, salvation through Jesus, the Christian life with Jesus as head, and the return of Jesus. He now is entrusting this gospel message to Timothy. Timothy is to make sure the message is not changed nor undermined. But this will be a problem for Timothy. When he begins to say, this is right, this is wrong, you can teach, you cannot teach, some will accept it, but others are going to resent or challenge it. So Paul reminds Timothy in chapter 1, verse 18. Timothy, my son, meaning his spiritual son, I give you this instruction in keeping with the prophecies once made about you, meaning at his ordination, so that by following them, you may fight the good fight, holding on to faith and a good conscience. When others question Timothy's authority, when he's tempted to avoid confrontation, he is to remember his ordination. God not only called him, but also gifted him for ministry. Now he must be true to his faith and his conscience. He must limit what is taught in the local church so the gospel message does not get ruined or even lost. 7 times Paul refers to it as the faith, meaning Jesus as Savior, Jesus as head, Jesus return. Paul knows the danger in the church because when he had been there, he had specifically dealt with 2 of the men teachers. They had willfully pushed away what they knew to be true and shipwrecked the faith. Paul uses this picture language to say it was as though faith had been broken apart and left everyone in the church open to believe anything. According to verse 20, Paul had handed them over to Satan. This was Paul's term for church discipline. These men could attend the teaching part of the service, but could no longer have any responsibility, authority, or leadership in the church. They could not participate in the potluck meal after the teaching part or receive Holy Communion, which was at the end of the meal. Since these men wanted to follow Satan's path, Satan would be allowed to bring some kind of suffering to their lives. It could be problems, loss, pain, or illness. The purpose was to teach and correct. Notice the phrase in verse 20, to be taught. When these two men admitted their teaching was not part of the gospel message and they repented, the suffering they experienced would be removed. They could once again receive communion, and if they remained faithful, their leadership would be restored. Paul had disciplined these two men. Now, Timothy is to stop other men from false teaching and use church discipline if necessary. As church leader, Timothy has the authority to say which men can teach and what they can teach. He also has authority to set standards for church members who lead in public prayer. According to chapter 2, verse 2, church members should not just pray for themselves, but also for those in authority. They should pray for Nero so they have freedom to practice their faith as long as possible. What none of them know is that they will have just one more year of religious freedom. In July 64 AD, part of Rome is burned, and Nero blames the Christians. From then on, there is severe persecution for believers. Church members in Ephesus are to pray for Nero. But their prayers, in order to be effective, must be led by qualified people. Chapter 2, verse 8. I want men everywhere to lift up holy hands in prayer without anger or disputing. Raising hands with palms open, facing upward, was the normal way to pray in the first century. It was how Christians, Jews, and even pagans all prayed. Paul is not giving instruction about their body position. He's giving instruction about their spiritual condition. Hands stretched towards God must be holy. They should never think of leading others into the presence of a holy God without first making sure their life is holy. In chapter 1, Paul said there were controversies, arguments between church members. Some of the men were angry at those they argued with. They used public prayer to denounce those who did not agree with them. Paul says, when men lead in public prayer, it's to be done with a right attitude, without anger or disputing. In all of your translations, you will have chapter 2, verse 9, beginning with the words, similarly, in like manner, also, in the same way. Paul has just explained how men are to pray. The Greek word for men means male gender. Paul continues, in the same way, meaning, as men lead in prayer, in the same way when women lead in prayer. Verse 9, I also, in the same way, want women, when they lead in prayer, to dress modestly, with decency and propriety, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or expensive clothes, but with good deeds appropriate for women who profess to worship God. During the time of public prayer, men are standing up and using prayer to continue their arguments with other church members. Women are standing up and using prayer to show off their hairdo, clothes, or jewelry. Paul says, when women lead in public prayer, they are to draw attention to God, not themselves. And if they want respect and leadership on the weekend, they should be known for their godly life during the week. Whether in Paul's day or our day, when a woman has a life of godliness, a godly church will respect her and seek her leadership. Up to this point, Paul has dealt with men who are teaching and men and women who are leading in public prayer. In the last part of chapter 2, he deals with women who are teaching. He's going to say women need instruction, men's ideas need correction, and he's explaining society's view of women. There are only two churches, Corinth and Ephesus, where Paul puts restrictions on women, and for very good reasons. Corinth, in southern Greece, was controlled by the goddess Aphrodite. So women dominated the worship and life of this city. When the local church was formed, women thought they could set the rules and decide what was acceptable. Their actions caused unbelievers to think prostitution was part of Christianity. They also disrupted the church services as they challenged their husbands while they were speaking. Paul had to put restrictions on women in the Corinthian church. In Ephesus, the idol goddess Artemis was the center of attention, all the way back to the 500s BC. By the first century AD, goddess worship was a basic part of the culture. Political leaders in the city were men, but women had a prominent role in city life. In the church, after Paul left, women thought they could set the rules and be in charge. Two problems developed. First of all, strict Jewish men, believers from Jerusalem, had moved to Ephesus and were part of the church congregation. These men believe all women are inferior and should never be taught. They want to remove women from having any part of church activity. The second problem involves the widows. Older widows in the church have a teaching ministry, but in addition, younger widows are also teaching. However, they have been deceived by false teachers. During the week, they're visiting church members in their homes and teaching these errors. They're also repeating all the local gossip. So to deal with the false teaching of the women, Paul says these women are not to teach. To deal with the prejudice of the men, Paul corrects the wrong ideas. Paul's instruction to Timothy about this local problem does not mean it is for all churches, in all cultures, in all centuries. However, whenever and wherever these problems do arise, here is the pattern for dealing with them. Chapter 2, verse 11. A woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man. She must be silent. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not the one deceived. It was the woman who was deceived and became a sinner. But she will be saved through childbirth if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with propriety. Reading this in English from a Western point of view in the 21st century makes it sound like Paul hates women. But remember, Paul is writing in Greek, from a Jewish point of view in the first century. This changes the meaning of several statements. First, he tells Timothy in verse 11, let a woman learn. In the Greek, it is a direct command. So either he's saying, women, learn, or you men, let a woman learn. This is a radical statement. The Jewish men from Jerusalem said women were inferior and incapable of learning. Women should not be educated. Paul says, wrong. Let a woman learn. The church is to provide her with correct spiritual teaching. Paul also says she's to learn in silence. To us, that is a put-down. But in the first century, it was a Jewish phrase given to rabbis in training. He learns in silence meant he shows wisdom by learning with an open mind. Because of his maturity, he does not argue nor resist instruction. So when Paul says a woman is to learn in silence, it's a compliment. He means that when a woman learns, she can be known for wisdom, maturity, and an open mind, just like rabbis who are in training. But then he adds, women are to learn in all submission. Women are not to resist or say they do not need instruction. They are above it. Women in the Ephesian church must learn and receive instruction from Timothy, their leader. They are not to put themselves above him or try to have authority over him. Until they get training, they must be stopped from teaching before they lead anyone else astray. Women leading people astray was a big issue with Jewish men. They were always discussing it among themselves, and when they did, they always brought up the story of Adam and Eve. They would say, well, you know, Adam was formed first, then Eve. So Paul begins with this popular quote, but then he adds the statement, when Adam sinned, he was not deceived. Meaning, Adam knew exactly what he was doing. It was intentional. In contrast, Eve sinned because she was deceived. This is not said to make her inferior, but to show there was a reason for her action. What she did was not intentional. We in the West are not going to see Paul's logic, but it was very obvious to the Jewish men. They were always saying that Adam had more influence and power than Eve. Paul is pointing out, if that were true, he should have used his influence and power when Eve gave him the forbidden fruit. Adam should have told her. She was deceived. She had disobeyed God. But according to the account, Eve gave the fruit to him, and he ate it. Later, when God asked him about it, he said, the woman you put here with me gave me some fruit, and so I ate it. Paul is making the point. It was Eve who influenced Adam. Women have power to influence. Jewish men also said, because Eve was deceived, it meant all women are gullible. It is why they cannot learn and should not learn. God knew Eve was inferior. The proof was he created her a sinner. Paul corrects that idea by saying Eve became a sinner. His logic is that Adam and Eve started out the same. Both were formed by God. Both were innocent, and both sinned. If Adam disobeyed and had a right to learn, then Eve, who disobeyed, had the right to learn. And it is important for women to learn. Eve was deceived and then influenced Adam to disobey. In Paul's day, women who are deceived can still influence men to disobey. The answer is not to make women silent forever, but to make them silent until they can be taught. Then they can use that knowledge along with their power of influence to benefit the church. From science, we know that generally women have better verbal skills. Since that is how God made women, it is logical they should be teachers. But within the church, they can only teach if first they have been given adequate and correct instruction. Paul's final statement in chapter 2, verse 15, has to do with women and how they are viewed by society. Because Eve sinned first and was deceived, people down through history, when they hear the story, would associate her with failure. But God did not want that. So to change that negative image, God gave Eve childbearing ability. To this day, Eve is thought of as the mother of the human race. And through her descendants, Jesus would come, who would deal with the sin she started. Eve's reputation was saved through her role of childbearing. Now the women in Ephesus who have been deceived, their reputation can be saved if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with propriety. Most translations do not show this distinction from the Greek because it is a violation of our grammar. Paul starts verse 15 by saying, "But she," meaning Eve, "will be saved through childbirth." Her reputation will be saved. Then in the last part of the sentence, he says, "if they continue in faith, love, and holiness." Paul continues to compare Eve and the women in the Ephesian church. Both were deceived, and both were given opportunity to save their reputation. Paul has dealt with women teachers in the Ephesian church. Men should let women learn and give them due recognition. Women should not expect leadership nor take leadership until they have received instruction from qualified teachers. They are not to take authority over Timothy. In this book, Paul is not just stopping women from teaching in the church. He's stopping everyone unless they are prepared. In chapter 1, Paul says men must be stopped from giving false teaching. If they refuse to listen, they should be handed over to Satan so they will learn. If and when they learn, they can be restored to leadership and teaching. These men are like Adam in knowing what they are doing. Therefore, they are considered more guilty. In chapter 2, women must be stopped from giving false teaching. However, they should not be handed over to Satan, but rather told to submit, to accept instruction from Timothy so they will learn. If and when they learn, they can be restored to leadership and teaching. Like Eve, they have been deceived. They do not realize what they're doing. They are not guilty to the same degree, but they still must be stopped from teaching. in the Ephesian church, because of false teachers and false teaching, Timothy has authority to say which men can teach and what they can teach. He has authority to set guidelines for men and women leading in public prayer. He has authority to stop all women from teaching until they are trained. Now in chapter 3, he has authority to choose new church leaders. The pastor is to be from the local congregation. He's responsible for the spiritual welfare of the church. Paul gives the qualifications which are similar to those in the book of Titus. The Bible says a pastor or elder is a man. The qualifications are clearly stated. Both words, pastor, elder, refer to the same position in the first century. In our day, we have separated the roles of pastor and elders. In small churches in this country, or mission churches in other countries, there may be a male pastor, but there may not be enough or even no qualified men for elders. If God has placed within the congregation older women who are qualified, they should be seen as God's gift and should be used until qualified older men are trained. The same applies to the role of pastor. I personally believe the pastor should be a man. It is God's plan. But if none are available with the gift of teaching, and there is a qualified woman with that gift, God will bless and use her in that role until a man is available. Gender is important, but it is not the most important. What really matters in spiritual leadership is, does the person have spiritual gifts, spiritual maturity, and the attitude of humility? In the Ephesian church, besides the male pastor elder, there were also men and women deacons. They were responsible for administration, so the pastor had time for prayer and teaching. Paul first gives the qualifications for men deacons in chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. In verse 11, he says, "In the same way, women." Some Bibles say their wives. The word "their" is not in the Greek. The word "wives" is the Greek word meaning women. So Paul is saying, in the same way, women. The description in the verses about men and women deacons are parallel. Notice verse 8. Men deacons are to be worthy of respect, not double-tongued, not drinking too much wine, not wanting dishonest gain. Verse 11, women deacons are to be worthy of respect, not malicious talkers, temperate, and trustworthy. 8 years earlier, the book of Romans refers to a woman named Phoebe who was deacon in her church. Women deacons were in the church as far back as the mid-50s A.D. Paul closes chapter 3 by explaining why he's given all these details. First, verse 14. Although I hope to come to you soon. In the Bible, when the word hope is used as a noun, in the Greek it means absolute certainty. When it is used as a verb, it is usually connected with travel plans and therefore has the meaning of maybe, uncertainty. Making human plans always involves uncertainty. That's when the verb is used. But the things of God have certainty. That's when it's used as a noun. Continuing with verse 14. Although I hope to come to you soon, I'm writing you these instructions, so if I'm delayed, you will know how people ought to conduct themselves in God's household, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and foundation of the truth. In chapters 1 to 3, Paul has explained how church members should conduct themselves. Men and women teachers, men and women prayer leaders, and church leaders. Now in chapters 4 through 6, Paul explains how Timothy should conduct himself. He's to be faithful in his message. Paul says, teaching that denies the gospel message comes from deceiving spirits and demons, meaning Satan's angels. The source of false teaching is Satan. This is why it must be stopped within the church. Timothy should not be afraid to deal with false teaching. Timothy is also to be faithful in his personal life. Chapter 4, verse 12. Do not let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, life, love, faith, and in purity. This is true for Timothy in the first century. It is also true for young people of today. If they follow God's rules in how they talk and live, then even if they are young, God is able to use them. Faithful in his message, faithful in his personal life, and thirdly, Timothy is to be faithful in his leadership. Chapters 5 and 6. Once again, Paul explains about widows who had no family to provide for them. A widow could take a vow and pledge herself to the local church for the rest of her life. She would be given responsibilities, including a teaching ministry. In return, the church would give her food, clothing, and housing. In the Ephesian church, younger widows had taken vows, met eligible men, and then wanted to be released from their vows so they could remarry. Paul says younger widows should be encouraged to remarry. So now he makes a rule that says only widows who are 60 years or older with godly lives can pledge themselves to the local church. Paul's statement in chapter 5, verse 8 needs an explanation. He says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. This applies only to those who have acted responsibly and used their resources wisely. We are never commanded to help those who use money for addictions, uncontrolled spending, greed, or bad choices. Remember Paul's rule? If a person will not work, he should not eat. Paul's final instruction is about money. First, about people who want money. Chapter 6, verse 8. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Paul is not saying it's wrong to make money. It's not wrong to want to make more money. But the desire to get rich should never be our driving, consuming passion. Riches bring danger. In the Ephesian church, it was church leaders who were eager for money, and it got them into trouble. Next, Paul talks about people who have money. Verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their certainty in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their certainty in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Notice the balance. If we do not have a lot of money, we should not let making money be the only priority in our life. If we have money, we should enjoy it. God does not want us to feel guilty for having money and nice things. He does not command us to give it all away. He gives us these things to enjoy and to use wisely. This book is all about ministry. Some of us have roles of leadership and ministry in the church. Others have different kinds of ministry in the community, at work, or in the family. We can only lead others as far as we have gone ourselves. This means before we try to fix anyone else's life, we need to first let God fix our life. Paul referred to Timothy as a man of God. When people think of us, would they ever give us the title man of God, woman of God? It is possible if we are willing to let God work in our lives, if we are willing to let Him change us. Let's close in prayer. Thank you, Father, that whether we are men or women, you want to use us. Help us to recognize our abilities and to develop them so you can use us in the place you have put us. Most of all, help us to become the man of God, the woman of God you created us to be. Develop your character within us and give us the courage to change. Thank you. It is possible because of Jesus. Amen.